Katie, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 14, 2008, so I celebrated 2 years about a month and a half ago, which is a miracle. My speaker tonight is one of my best friends in the program. She just became my roommate about 3 months ago as well. It's a Danielle. It's Danielle, actually. Most of you know her as wife. That's what I call her. But she's one of the females I look up to most in this program. There's a lot of things about her that I aspire to be, and I respect her a lot, and she's always there for me when I need her throughout the last 3 years that I've known her. So I asked her to speak for me tonight. So here she is.
Hi, I'm Danielle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 2nd, 2007. I have a home group. This is my home group. I have a sponsor. She's here tonight. And I sponsor others. So, as soon as I always have to speak, I just all of a sudden have to go to the bathroom. Like, just all of a sudden, you know. So, I'll try to stop being so nervous. But what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And my old sponsor, she used to say, you know, what it was like for me, what happened to me, and then what it's like now for me, because, like, it never changed, like, just I did. And I really like that, and I related to that a lot. I was born here, raised here, lived here pretty much all my life, besides 2 years in South Carolina. I think that's where I get a twang. And, you know, it was... I don't know, my childhood was pretty rough. Like, I had a lot of grief in my childhood. And, you know, my parents, like, my dad was an alcoholic. My mom's normal, you know. So it's just a really tumultuous, like, household from the very beginning. And, you know, I never knew how it was going to be, like, when my dad came home and or when my mom came home, because she was always, like, dealing with that, those repercussions. So I kind of secluded a lot when I was a kid, kept to myself and took care of my sister. I have a little sister, not so little anymore. She's 24. And, you know, we just kind of did our own thing, you know, while my parents did their own thing. And, I grew up and, you know, I remember feeling different, not so much like different, but like, I don't know why I'm doing the air quotes a lot today, like the air quotes, but, I felt like really insecure. I always felt like I didn't belong, you know, I always felt, like I wasn't a part of something, you know, and like I've said before, you know, if there was a group of people and I was in that group of friends, I always thought like the other people were better friends with each other than they were with me, you know, I always felt like I was from the other side of the street, you know, and I was, like, I went to a Catholic school, so there's a lot of rich kids and I was a poor kid, you know, and like, you know, they are all going to dance and gymnastics, and, like, I was playing outside doing, like, gymnastics in my front lawn, you know, like, it was just wasn't equivalent, you know, so I'm like, oh, I need to go to, you know, tap dance school, and, you know, then I would be a hit, you know, and then I tried, and I was horrible, and, so it's okay, and, I got over that, thanks to AA, you know, and, but as I grew up, you know, like, I went to Catholic school, and I was raised with good values, like, good morals, and, you know, we went to church, and, you know, it was every Wednesday and Sunday, you know, I got taught to believe in God, and, you know, I knew right from wrong, and, you know, when I was 11, my parents divorced, and, I told my mom to divorce my dad because I couldn't take it anymore. Like, there was a lot of, you know, and that's really selfish and self-centered from, like, the very beginning, you know. I'm, like, thinking about, oh, it's affecting me when my mom's the one that's getting beaten up and verbally abused and everything. Like, it's all about me and what I can't deal with, you know. And I really never took into consideration, like, what she was going to go through from that point on, like, living in, like, a single family home, you know, raising two kids. And, you know, she drove to Orlando every day, back and forth, you know, just to put food on the table and a roof over her head. And, you know, all I could think about was, like, okay, now I get two Christmases, two birthdays, you know, like, I am set. Like, I'll get anything I want. And I still didn't, you know, because we were poor, like I said before. And then we were even poorer, you know, so it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. So I was just mad, you know, I was just angry. But I kept all this to myself. Like, I'm a bottler, you know, like, I bottle everything up. And then, you know, I let it, like, explode later. And, like, that's what happened. Like, I started bottling all these feelings inside from an early age. And, you know, like, I also was the kind of person that would make everything look good on the outside, and when everything on the inside was just crumbling, you know, and I felt dead to the world for a very long time. And as I grew up in high school, after my parents' divorce, I got thrown into public school. And that was interesting, you know, like in private school, girls fight with words, and in public school, they like, you know, fight with fists, you know. And that was like my first experience in public school was like this girl fight, you know, like they're ripping off all their clothes, and I'm just like, oh my God, like I hope this never happens to me, you know. And, you know, that was just like really, you know, it was just a culture shock, I guess. But, after in high school, I guess, like, you know, the way I kind of dealt with life and, you know, like my family environment, because, you know, my mom, like, because she was working a lot, she didn't really have a lot of time to spend with us kids. So, like, I secluded, you know, and I was in my room, you know, and I would escape by reading. Like, I would read a book, like, every 2 days, you know, like a 300-page book every 2 days. I would just sit in my room and do nothing, you know, listen to music. And I was, like, the hopeless romantic, you know, and it was just really cute, you know, but a cute little girl. And then, like, it got bad. But, you know, so that's, like, how I kind of dealt with things. And, like, I secluded. And then in high school, like, I was, I played lots of sports. So I was, like, the athletic type. And I always, like, you know, would pride myself on how good I was in either in academics or in sports. Because, like, that was one of my talents, you know, playing soccer or volleyball. I was captain. And I made good grades. You know, I had a 4.6 in high school, you know, like, and those were things like I really like valued, like that was my identity, you know, like that's what I valued myself as. And when all that started like to fall or falter, you know, after I started drinking, like I had nothing, you know, like I had nothing to myself. And I didn't start drinking until I was about 18. It was after I graduated. My parents had this like weekend at the beach thing, and I talked about this before, but my first drink was a Zima that she put the little apple Jolly Rancher in. It was what I did, and it turns the flavor. I didn't really taste anything, but I swear I did, you know, like I told everybody I did. I'm like, oh, I know the flavor, you know. And so that was my first drink, and then also that night, you know, I only remember having, like, one or two drinks, and apparently, like, I also took a lot of powdery substances and a lot of green leaf stuff and smoked cigarettes, and that was, like, my first experience, you know, drinking. And what I remember about that was that, and this is kind of like, you know, what happened during every single time I drank, was that it gave me the ability not to care about anything. Like, it just took away every single feeling of I'm not okay, and it made me okay. You know, I felt, not that I felt great, you know, I didn't feel like I was taller or skinnier, you know, more pretty, you know, like I didn't have any of those things. I just felt okay being me for once, you know, and I never felt okay. And, you know, my cousin, his girlfriend, they kind of like, altercation like how my parents used to, and my sister was just like, you know, please break it up, do something. And I just remember going to sleep and saying, it's okay, I don't care, you know, because I didn't, you know, at that time. And I went to sleep, and you know, that's how it all, you know, started going downhill. And I didn't start drinking like all the time right away, you know. It was a slow progression, and it was fun, you know, like I had a lot of fun drinking, I had a lot of good times, and then it just stopped working for me. And I got a DUI when I was 23, and I still was blaming it. Like, I always pointed the finger, you know. It was always somebody else's fault. You know, I never took responsibility for my actions. It was always the guy who I was hanging out with, you know, it was Evan's fault, you know. Like, Evan, if I wasn't hanging out with Evan, my mom doesn't like him anyways, you know. If I wasn't hanging out with him, I wouldn't have got this DUI, you know. Or if I wasn't at Hyde Park Cafe, like, everybody gets DUIs at Hyde Park Cafe, you know. And, like, if I wasn't there, then I wouldn't have got a DUI, you know. It was like, damn Cleveland, you know, like, that street, it, like, haunts me. And so it's like, I always, like, you know, it was always something else, you know. And, like, I never contributed, like, drinking to consequences, you know. And I think, like, I'm a very smart person, you know. And I don't know why I didn't get that, you know, like, drinking causes me, like, bad things to happen, you know. Like, I either crash my car. I've done that so many times, you know. And I never thought, like, I had a drinking problem. I just thought I wasn't doing it right, you know, like, I'm just like, okay, well, it's like Nike, just do it, you know, like, I'm gonna get this, you know, I'm gonna get this one day, you know, it's just because I'm not eating, and it's all about and more about alcoholism, you know, like I've tried wine, I tried beer, you know, and then like that wasn't, you know, fast enough, so then I would switch to shots, you know, so I'm like, okay, well, if I just do shots tonight, you know, like that's just retarded, you know, and drink water in between, but then by the second or third one, I just forgot my whole purpose of the night, and I was like, oh, I'm already drunk, I might as well just go on, you know, to the races, and I did, you know, and I was a blackout drinker from the very beginning, and I can count on my hand the, like, times I probably didn't black out. And that's really scary, and I drove every single time that I went out, you know, because I was Miss Independent, you know, it was like, I was, you know, the one that, you know, because I didn't want to be like my mom is really what it came down to, you know, I didn't want to depend on anybody, and, you know, I was like 18, I got a checking account, moved out, you know, at 17, and I was just on my own, you know, and I didn't need anybody's help. So when I got here, like, asking for help was, like, huge for me, like, I didn't know how to do that, nor did I want to do that, you know, I just, like, it was just all ego. You know, like I couldn't humble myself to ask you people for help. And, you know, the way, oh, one thing, you know, that wife wanted me to mention was when I was 21, I got diagnosed with breast cancer. And this is just probably like a good example of like what qualifies me as an alcoholic and my seat in this meeting is that. So I'm driving with my boyfriend. It's like 3 o'clock, and I'm mad, you know, like, because 3 o'clock rolls around, you're mad at your boyfriend. That's just how it goes, you know? Probably because if you're like me and you're alcoholic, you're just mad. And he probably made me leave, and I just wasn't about it, you know, last call, whatever, you know? Like, it's not done yet. And so anyways, we're driving in West Chase, and we're going about 40, 50 miles an hour, and the guy's like, you know, the kid's like, you know, like, saying all this stuff, and I'm just like, well, pull over, you know, because, like, I don't want to talk to you anymore. And I'm stubborn, you know, I've always been that way. And I was like, you know, you don't understand, because like if you don't like pull over now, like I'm getting out whether you like it or not, you know. And he didn't pull over, so I was just like, fine, I'll just get out, you know, like, and I did. And I had this like vision that I was gonna just be able to jump out and like run, you know, like into the woods away from him, like away from him, you know, at all costs. And that didn't happen. And so I tumbled. And this is, like, during cancer. So, like, I have no hair, okay? I have a wig. And it's, like, you know, at the time I, like, fell and I, you know, tumbled, you know, and he ran over my shoe. So he thought he ran me over, you know. So then I get up and he stopped the car by then. And I'm bleeding everywhere. You know, I have road rash from my shoulders all the way down to my butt. And he's just, like, freaking out, running to me. And I'm just, like, oh my God, like, F you, you know, take me to the hospital. I'm still trying to find my wig, you know, like, my wig is, like, 100 yards away, you know, in a tumbleweed, because it's, like, it went with me, like, in a roll, you know, so it's, like, a ball, and I'm trying to put it on, and, you know, it was just a mess, and you get to the hospital, and then they're, like, we got a bleeder, you know, on the loudspeaker, and I'm just, like, oh, you know, all in all, like, I'm the most important person in that room, you know, like, sick. And so that was like one of the experiences, like I was in the hospital, and then another time I cut an artery, you know, like by stepping on glass, because I was just like, I'm not getting out of the bathroom because you told me to, just because we broke some glass, you know, like, and I go to the hospital yet again, you know. And those were my drinking experiences. So, like, I definitely earned my seat here. There's so many more that would be here forever. Thanks. And, you know, but what really happened that got, I guess, made me have that moment of clarity was I was 25, and, you know, my sobriety date's January 2nd. So the last time I drank was New Year's Eve, but it was kind of like around the clock, so that's why it's January 2nd. And because I didn't stop. But what was different about it was the night before was, you know, my boyfriend or whoever I was dating at that time, he locked me out of his house because I guess I got, I don't know, I was probably angry and kicked him. I don't know what he said, you know. I deny it. But, no, I'm just kidding. I totally did it. But, so I did it, and he locked me out of his house, and, you know, I was just in, I was flabbergasted. Like, how could this guy, like, lock me out of his house, you know? Like, how does he know who I am, you know, that whole thing? And so he did, and he was like, get honest with yourself about your drinking. And I've had very few people tell me, like, to my face, like, I have a problem with alcohol, and I don't know how to drink like a lady, you know. And, you know, and I always try to be the classy drinker, you know. I'd always think, like, I'm going to go to Blue Martini or something and drink some wine, you know, and get a rich guy and go home and have babies or something, you know. And, you know, and that never happened, you know, because I wasn't a lady when I drank. I drank vodka straight out of the bottle. Like, that's what I did. And, you know, it's just really, like, I wasn't, you know, I was just a really, like, I was a drunk, you know, like, there was nothing classy about my drinking. And so when he told me, like, I walked home, you know, like, I walked to 7-Eleven, this guy Chico gave me a ride. And which I was really grateful, you know, because if it wasn't for Chico, then I wouldn't have gotten 7-Eleven, you know. And it was, like, really hot that day, and I have my going out wear from the night before, and like mascara is running down my face. It's just sad. And it's like that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, you know. And I'm just like, I hate my life right now. And you know, it's just sad. Like, I didn't have any friends. Like, all my friends, you know, like, they don't want to talk to me. My family doesn't want to talk to me because I'm only at their house. And by then I moved back in with them, you know. And that was like the ultimate failure, was to move back in with my parents, you know, at 25 years old, which it isn't, you know. But like, that's my perspective, you know. Like, I had definitely a different perspective back then. And, you know, and I got on my knees when I got home, and, you know, I prayed to God. And at this point in my life, you know, I was just so angry at God, you know, because God was the root of all my problems, you know. Like, that's how I saw him, you know. Like, he was responsible for, you know, like, my dad died when I was 18, and I blamed that on God, you know. And, like, I blamed my DUI on God, you know. Like, everything in my life was because of God. And, like, the cancer was because of God, you know. And, like, that's not God, you know. Like, God gave me several opportunities in order to, you know, evolve into the person that I am today. And, like, that's what I believe, like, what happened to me. And, but I got on my knees that night, you know, and I prayed. And I was like, you know, please, God, grant me just one moment of, one moment of serenity or peace, you know, is what I said. And, because I don't want to do this anymore, you know. Like, I'm tired, you know. I'm, like, sick and tired being sick and tired. And I hated myself. Like, I looked in my eyes, and they were just black, you know. Like, they're completely black. I felt like I had no soul. And, you know, I didn't even want to live anymore, you know. Like, I just, you know, I really just wish God would have taken me. And that's what I said, like, please take me or help me. And that was the first time I asked for help in a really long time. And even all those times I went to church when I was young, like, I didn't believe in him. Like, I just thought I had to do it, so I just did it, you know. And I always thought, like, God was punishing. And and that's just how it was. Like, I don't know. I never, like, they didn't tell me that, you know. Like, I just, you know, I just formed my own beliefs when I went. I'm sure they were really good people trying to carry a good message. And so after I prayed that prayer, like, I still went out. My girlfriend called me not even 5 minutes later, and I totally forgot about my prayer. You know, she's like, Hard Rock Casino tonight. And I was just like, right on. And so we went out, you know, and I drank like a fish, like I usually do. And I didn't get drunk at all, you know. And that was rare for me, because that never happened, you know. And it was like that moment of clarity when I started realizing, like, what am I doing with my life? You know, I'm 25 years old. I have nothing going for me, you know. Like, all my friends are getting married, having babies. Like, they're going to college. They're graduating, you know. They're going to different places. They're moving, you know. Like, I didn't have any of those things, you know. I was stagnant in my life. And I went backwards, you know. Like, I destroyed every relationship I had. And I destroyed my family, you know, in our relationship. You know, like, I've said horrible things to my mother. You know, I told my mom I've hated her since the day she was, you know, since the day I was born once, you know. And that's just awful things to say. And I'm not proud of, like, the person that I was and the things I did. But I can, you know, look back on it now, and, like, my experience can help someone else, because, you know, a lot of us have the same experiences. And I don't do those things today. So what happened was the next day, it was New Year's Day, and my dad's side of the family is, like, rampant with alcoholism, so, like, you know, they can smell it coming in, you know. And then my aunt got sober. She was sober about 2 years, and she basically did the intervention on New Year's Day, which is, you know, with our whole family, you know. It was so nice, and it was, like, New Year's Day dinner, and they're doing their intervention, telling me I have a problem with drinking. And I'm just like, okay. And it was kind of like at the point where opportunity met willingness, for me, because I just surrendered. Like, I couldn't do it anymore, you know. And so they offered to send me to treatment. So I was a treatment baby. I went to treatment for 2 months. And I guess that's what I needed, you know. And, like, I don't think, like, you know, everybody has to get sober that way. That's just what I think I needed, you know, because God gives me everything I need. And the people he places in my life, he places for a reason. And so... after, you know, I went to treatment and, you know, they told me a whole bunch of things like get a sponsor, work the steps, go to meetings, you know, like get a home group. They told me to reach out, you know, call women. And that was just like the last thing on my mind I wanted to do was call other women, because like I was afraid of you guys, you know, like you knew me, you know, like you knew the things I did. And I was afraid that you wouldn't like me, you know, if you found out like who I really was and the things I did. And I, you know, and that wasn't the case at all. And what I started to realize that was when my sponsor did my fifth step, and she told me a lot of the stuff she did, and I really related in that, because I had a really bad case of terminal uniqueness. Like, I thought I was completely different from all you guys. Like, I was the victim for a long time. Like, all this stuff happened to me, and, you know, that's why, like, this isn't going to work for me. It's going to work for you guys, great, you know, but it's not going to work for me. And I believed that for a long time, and that was my perspective. And it didn't get better for a long time. My first year of sobriety was not a pink cloud. I was the crazy weekend suicide attempt. And, you know, the boyfriend at the time, he would be like, oh, I'm going to Vicky Paw. And then I'm just like, oh, I hate my life. You know, like, I'm just going to stay here and sulk, you know. And I did. And it was miserable, like completely miserable. And, you know, and I stayed like that for about 15 months. I did that into sobriety. But the thing was, like, I still got honest. You know, and that was really important for me, because, like, I got honest, and I still went to meetings, and I still did a lot of service, and I prayed. And, you know, and I would pray that third step prayer all the time, like, because I was really, like, please, God, take away my difficulties, you know, and help me, like, use them, you know, for the goodwill of other people, you know. And, you know, so I always say that prayer. And then one day, like, I just woke up, and things started to get better, you know, like, that my perspective started to change, you know, and I really didn't think it would work for me. But, you know, my sponsor would say, don't leave till the miracle happens. And, you know, she was absolutely right. Like, the miracle did happen. And so things started to change, and I started to get different positions in service, you know, and I started working at, you know, central office and GSR and, like, district level and, like, just different things. Like, we have an AA to be, you know, accountable and, like, hold commitments. And I got a commitment here, you know. I had several commitments here in my first couple years of sobriety. And, you know, a lot of things, like, I look back, like, 3.5 years ago, like, if what I wanted when I got here was, like, I just didn't want to drink anymore. Like, that's all I wanted. And, you know, I just wanted to meet some people and have a good time, you know, and that's all I wanted, you know. Like, I never thought my life would be like it is today. Like, I never thought I would have a career. Like, I never thought I would have the friends I do, like Katie, you know, like, and she's amazing. Like, everything she says about me is the exact way I feel about her. You know, like, she's been there through everything, you know, through breakups, through deaths, you know, through life, you know, like, just everything. And that's so awesome to find people like that, you know, that will bend over backwards for you, you know, in sobriety, who are there for you. Because none of my friends ever did that drinking. You know, like, I remember I had a flat tire 2 blocks from my girlfriend's house, okay? She would not pick me up because she could not put the vodka bottle down, you know? So I'm like, this girl is unbelievable. And, you know, and that was just how it went, you know? And, like, and then I'm like, oh, I understand, because I probably wouldn't do that for her, you know? And, like, I don't have to go through stuff like that today. And, you know, and, like, the relationships with my family, and, like, it's just, like, amazing today. Like, my mom and I have a good relationship, you know, because it was so awful. Like, I couldn't even be in the room with my mom for more than 5 minutes. And, like, I can sit down and have, like, lunch or breakfast with her. And, you know, I'm in nursing school now. I have about 4 months till I finish. And I'm just like, that's a whole new avenue of my life, and, like, just giving back to people just so freely, you know, that can't really, you know, it makes me feel really grateful for the life I have, because a lot of people are just really debilitated and can't, you know, do anything, and, like, you have to, they're totally bedridden, you have to do everything for them, you know. And, like, I'm able to walk with 2 feet and walk out the door and drive home, you know, and kick my feet up, and they can't do that. And, You know, and that's all because of God, you know, and, like, I'm sober because of God. Like, I, you know, like, I might have taken the action, but, like, God gave me the opportunity to do that because I could have died so many times drinking. And so everything, like, I have to remember to always be grateful because I always hear, like, a grateful alcoholic would never drink. And I think that's really true for me. As long as I stay grateful, like, I won't drink. And as long as I do the things that you've told me to do, you know, like, I'll, you know, get to stay sober another day. And, you know, I've always been told that we have a, you know, spiritual, like, we have a reprieve, you know, a daily reprieve. You know, it's, like, based on my spiritual maintenance. And, you know, as long as I keep praying every day and, you know, I get another day sober. And, you know, like, the relationship I have with God today, like, I never thought I was going to have a relationship with God. I never thought I was a, you know, religious person. And I like the whole fact that when I got here, they were just like, you know, you can choose your own concept of a higher power. And I really like that because I, you know, I didn't want to limit my God, like, you know, because he can do anything. Like, God is either everything or he's nothing, and I chose for him to be everything. So I never have put him in a box anymore, and I used to do that before I got sober. You know, I just put him in a box, and then I would tuck him away, you know, and I wouldn't even look back. And, you know, today it's like I have a great relationship, and I really think, like, you know, he can do the things for me that, you know, or give me the willpower to do things I don't think I can do. You know, like, every morning I have to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning sometimes, and I'm like, please, God, get me out of bed, you know, because I don't want to go. And I have fear every single time I go into clinicals because, you know, it's, like, nerve-wracking. And, you know, and I get through the day, and I, you know, it gets better. Like 15 minutes into it, I forget all of what I was afraid of, you know, and I just do what they told me to do. And all my fears, like on my fourth step, you know, I've conquered a lot of those in sobriety. Like I've gone through those things and I've overcome them, and I'm not so afraid. Like I'm not so afraid of the unknown, you know. And you know, I kind of like I like that, you know. Like I don't want to know like what's going to happen in my life. Like I said, it's completely different than what I thought it was going to be. And I know God has a plan for me, and it's always been better than what I have for myself. So I'm really grateful to be here. I'm glad to see everybody tonight, and meeting's gotten a lot bigger. So, and I miss you guys. So thanks for letting me share.
At this time, we will be passing the baskets in accordance with our seventh tradition, which states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Maura will be giving out the chips.
Hi, I'm Mormon alcoholic. And here at Tampa YPG, we have a chip system to denote the milestones in our sobriety.